Long live the fighters!
Long live the fighters!
What's up, everyone? This is the Destruction Reviews podcast. My name is Jason.
I'm Jeremiah.
Today, we are discussing Dune Part 2, directed by Denis Villeneuve, starring Timothée Chalamet as Paul Mahdieb Usul Atreides, Zendaya as Chani, or the Desert Spring, Rebecca Ferguson as Jessica Atreides, or the new Reverend Mother.
The new.
Javier Bardem as Stilgar. Austin Butler as Fade Rotha Harkonnen. Josh Brolin as Gurney. Stellan Skarsgård as Baron Vladimir Harkonnen. Big Dave Bautista as Glasau Harkonnen. Christopher Walken as the Emperor. Fresh off of his Super Bowl ad.
That was shocking. That was a shocker. I'm still
And Florence Pugh as Princess Irulan. So, if you haven't seen this movie, there will be major spoilers ahead, although the book has been out for 60 years, so it is what it is.
Right.
I have one word, Jeremiah, for my reaction.
Okay.
Masterpiece.
I like it. I can't sum it up in one word, man. I'm actually at a loss for words.
That's actually better.
Okay. Because this movie, it is great, phenomenal, exceptional. It is just completely off the charts, crazy good. Let's dive into it, man.
Okay.
Let's dive into it.
So, well, where do we want to start? Where do you want to start?
Where do I want to start? Okay. How about we start with, did you like the way this movie blended into the first?
I really do. I did not expect this movie to pick up almost immediately after the first one ends.
Okay.
I thought there would have been a little bit of a time skip. Even if it was a couple months, I didn't think it was going to be like a giant year. But based on like the trailer and some of the things we saw heading into this movie, you know, like the tattoos on Lady Jessica, yes, and some of the battle scenes that, you know, we'll eventually get to at the end of the movie.
The blue eyes.
The blue eyes.
Paul.
Yep. So we're like, okay, there's got to be a lot of time jump. But there's not. And that's fine, because that's actually pretty cool, because... We watched this movie last week before we reviewed it, before we saw this one, so it was still really fresh. So knowing, like, the warrior's body was wrapped in that tarp when they were carrying him, and so this movie starts with our heroes kind of, like, you know, dropping that body and kind of defending themselves from the... whoever those were.
What were they? That was like the henchmen of the, either the Emperor the or Sardukin. Yes. Yep.
So, yes. That's a long answer to say. It blended very well with the first one.
I would agree, man. Shockingly well. Shockingly well. It's so hard, man, to put together a series of movies, because you always have either one's good and the other one's bad, or, you know, something like that going on. But, man. There's none of that. There is none of that. This movie, in fact, is better than part one, which, you know, I'm leaning towards the fact that this is probably the only movie that could be better than part one, is part two of the same series, because the part one was so good.
Yeah.
So it only makes sense for it to be outdone by part two of the same series.
Yeah, it's... Oh, my gosh. It is... so then I will ask this, visually, do you think this movie is as good or better than the first?
Visually, I will say, okay, so part one was visually stunning, as well as part two, but I think part two, everything was, so grand.
Yeah.
The scope was so big. You know, so large. So I think it was just more like awe-inspiring. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But they both looked great. They both looked great. But man, part two, man, it really stepped it up in several ways. It just, everything was ramped up, man. On a scale of 1 to 10, everything was on like 10. It really was.
The scope, like you were saying, mm-hmm. was just tremendous. I mean, there were scenes that were just, we were sitting back just going, look at that. That's right. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Whether it was the Harkonnen army mm-hmm. loading up to go into Arrakis, or it was the like the gladiator pit mm-hmm. on the Black Sun planet.
Yes.
Or just some of
the way the Emperor landed with all his army, man, and just the big ass pyramid that he brought with him. Like he brought an entire pyramid of Giza with him to the planet, plus an entire army. It was just incredible.
And then like the Fremen riding the sandworms, yes. And just, I mean, gosh, it just.
You can really feel the power in those things, man.
It was just, it's breathtaking. Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff that they were shooting and it was just, it was like paintings come to life in some of these things, man.
Absolute artwork here.
I can't, you know, there are movies that people will say, oh, that was like the best movie of all time or that movie was changed my life or whatever. And it's like, I'm trying to contextualize this movie because, you know, a lot of people online will say, you know, these hyperboles about this film and we'll get to it. But, like, I was born in 1978, so I never saw Star Wars in the theater. Okay. I saw that on, like, HBO or on VHS or whatever. I was never floored by that movie like that generation was.
Right.
You know, my generation was like maybe Terminator 2 or like Pulp Fiction, like different, you know.
Okay.
But seeing this film, this, how we feel, how we're like without words, and like literally if we see each other, we'll just talk about like aspects of this film because it's so great. This is what it must be like when people saw Star Wars in 1977.
It has to be.
Where it just changed the way they looked at filmmaking, where they changed the way they looked at just film, like science fiction. Like, this, you know, is probably one of the best science fiction movies I've ever seen. And, you know, 40-some years ago, Star Wars was that for people in 1977. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why it's like so stunning to me visually. Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen a ton of science fiction movies. I've seen a ton of war movies. I've never seen it like that.
This is remarkable. What they have been able to pull off. This is truly, truly like a crown jewel of filmmaking. Mm. It really, really, really is. Like, this movie is so cool. When me and Jason went to see the movie, there's like a young kid at the counter giving us our tickets. You know, young kid, you know. And, you know, we buy the tickets. And, you know, he gives us like this long like salute, this Dune speak. He was talking in like Arrakis. And he was just like, you know, beating his chest and saluting us, long live the fire. It was so cool, man. It was so, I have never experienced anything like that before. And I know people do stuff like that with Star Wars and with Lord of the Rings, but I've never been a part of something like that. And so to experience this random kid, you know, just geeked about the Dune universe, you know, just the whole lore of it. And he was just so proud, you know, to salute us. And it was cool. I love that, man. To the point where I almost went back to the theater and asked that guy, hey, man, can you give me that spiel again? I'm going to use it. Because it was great, man. Yeah. And it really added a lot. Like, you know, after he saluted us, me and Jess was like, okay, man, let's go see this movie. It added something for me. You know, I felt like I was part of a this movie is a movement. Mm-hmm. This series is like a movement.
Yep.
And I felt like I was part of that. You know what I mean? It made it feel even bigger on the outside of the movie theater. Yep. You know what I mean? So shout out to that kid, man.
Hopefully you're listening.
That's right. Shout out to you, man.
But like you were, I totally agree with you. This universe, that's a great word because, you know, yes, Dune has been out forever, but a whole new generation is experiencing this. And
like the book says, now a major motion picture, says right on the book, is now a major motion picture.
And I'm telling you, I came home and I was reading the appendices and I was going through the book and flipping through it going, man, I can't wait to just dive into more of it. You know, there is a ton of books after this, and maybe those will play into potential future movies, but holy mackerel, like, I just want more. And why, you know, why I feel that way is because I'm just so inspired by, like, I felt so moved by Stilgar's faith in Paul being the Maldib, being the one that, like,
completely unshakable.
I'm like, I don't know if I've seen a character like that in recent cinema where, like, I believed he believed.
Right.
And was, there were moments when, maybe there was a shadow of doubt. Especially when Paul came to, you know, to ride the sandworm for the first time. Like, either you're going to do it or you're going to die.
Right.
But, like, there's always that, like, what if? And then when it happens, when something happens that was in the prophecy, you'd say, as it was written.
Yes.
And it's just like, oh, my God. Like, and there was hundreds of people of his tribe telling him, you know, that he isn't the one, or you're crazy. Or even Paul himself was like, I'm not him. And he wouldn't stop believing. And we talk about layers in this film. There's so much talking about faith and religion and belief and just pure love of, like, something and someone that is just, you don't see it in this type of film. You know, you're going to see, you see it in a lot of, like, faith-based films, like, you know, stuff you'll see, like, you know, like, around Easter time or whatever. But, like, this is just, man, it's just perfect.
It's hard to put in words, man.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's like, to see it and to be affected emotionally was a moment that, like, I'm glad I had. But it is kind of hard to put into words.
It's really hard, man, because, man, they've done something really, really unique and just great. They've taken, you know, very relatable things, having faith in someone who you might not necessarily know that well, but you believe, you know, you believe in them even when they don't believe in themselves. And not only do you believe in them, but you believe in what they're there for, which is to help you. Okay, these people, Stilgar included, they have so much faith in Paul that their whole lives are devout to him. And, you know, it's just, you got factions of people who are believers. You got factions of people who think this is a ploy to control them. Zendaya's character, Chani, she's one of the non-believers. But without, and this is why this movie is so good, because there are, I'm going to point this out, but there are multiple instances in the movie where this happens, okay? So you got Chani, who's a non-believer, and without saying it, without her coming out and saying it, you see her character turn into a believer. Incredibly hard to do. That is so hard to pull off, man, to have us feel that instead of her saying it, and then we follow along. But there's multiple instances where something like that happens. Like, take this. How about this for a contrast, right? Okay? So, Batista's character. What is his name again? The Harkonnens have these outrageous names, okay?
Glasshow.
Yeah, Glasshow.
Just call him Batista.
Yeah, Big Dave.
You know what, Big Dave? Yeah. he went... We're going to get to it.
Okay, okay.
But he doesn't deserve to be called by his character's name.
Okay, so listen. Listen what I'm getting at, okay? How about this for a contrast? Okay, you got Dave, right? Who's a monster of a character, okay? Especially in part one. We're just like, he didn't do much. But we're like, man, he got to be badass. Yep. Plus, it's Batista.
Right.
You know, he's coming to wreck shop. Okay, so you get to part two, and he's still looking cool, still talking cool, but then it comes time to take action.
Yes.
And what does he do?
Mardeep!
He runs. He turns tail and runs back to the ship. Doesn't lay a finger on anyone. Now, how did they pull that off? Instead of the big reveal being, this guy's a total badass, he's a total coward.
Man.
Just as epic. But it was a curveball we never saw coming.
Because he is treating his underlings like trash, and he's just so intense.
So intense. He started the movie smashing some guy's head into the thing. Like, what? What? This is your moment to wreak havoc. And he turns tail. Incredible, man. Incredible. And then, like, to continue on that point, who's the actual badass? The scrawny, which you think to be a weakling, but he was anything but.
Right.
The scrawny, young, weird looking guy.
Yep.
You know what I mean? He turns out to be, you know, that powerful villain, which is what I loved as well. Because, oh man, I'm kind of skipping along here.
That's okay.
But look at Baron, okay? Another big bad guy.
Yep.
You know, he can float and fly and, you know, he's ruthless, you know? What happens? Relatively easy kill.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Didn't put up any fight at all. Shocking. So, just shocking. Shocking. I was just blown away by that. I'm like, what? But it wasn't an angry blown away. It was just like, no way. Like, this movie is very special, man. It really, really is.
So later in the third act, Batista eventually meets up with Gurney, who was scarred by Batista in the first film, and Gurney wanted revenge for the Atreides attack.
Mm-hmm. He murdered his whole family.
So they're on the battlefield, and you know, here comes Drax, you know, and Thanos one more time.
One more for the road.
And I'm like, oh, this is going to be excellent.
How long does it take to fight the end?
If you blink,
uh-huh,
Batista's dead.
Yes. What a shock. You're like, what? There's no way. Completely wipes him out.
I don't even think he landed a blow.
I don't think he did like some whip thing.
Yeah.
He had like a whip chain, which was also a surprise. I'm like, whoa. When he pulled out the whip, I'm like, oh, here we go.
Yep.
You know, because we had never seen that. It's like, uh-oh, didn't expect that. Not a factor.
Oh,
complete
man.
Wipeout.
And that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, tremendous. Because at that point in the movie, we know that Fade is the psychopath, is the man.
Right.
But like, he had been, he failed at his mission to get the spice back up. He was
demoted,
and then, you know, still in this moment, he was still going to try to, I thought, you know, make a stand, and he just went out.
How epic, man. I loved it,
oh,
man.
My God.
I loved it.
So good.
So good.
I'm telling you, dude, I just... Just awesome. Just,
it really
just,
was, man.
Just awesome. So, so I want to keep talking about Fade, the Fade Rathaw Harkonnen, the psychopath, played by Austin Butler, which if you didn't know, Austin Butler played Elvis in last year's Elvis movie, got nominated for Academy Award. The makeup, the look, the voice...
Complete 360.
I had to show Jeremiah a picture after the film. I was like, bro, like, you
couldn't believe it.
And having seen Elvis and kind of knowing his voice, I mean, I could pick it up, but this guy absolutely stole the show for me. Every scene he was in, he was chewing it up. He was You couldn't take your eyes off of him.
Yes.
And he was just so intense.
Yes.
And he believed that he was going to become emperor mm-hmm. because his uncle had told him, you know, whatever the prophecy was, or whatever a prophecy that they were telling him.
Yeah.
He was like, look, Batista, you're terrible. Mm-hmm. I'm better. I'm going to make our family proud.
May Batista kiss his boots.
Yes!
His older brother.
Cousin?
Cousin. Okay.
Because they were both nephews.
They were.
But they weren't brothers.
Okay.
And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But whatever. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter.
But still, Batista was the older one.
Yeah, he was the older one.
Yes. Physically, way, massive. Right.
Yes.
Way bigger.
Right. Oh, my God.
Like, it was no comparison. Dude, it's Batista up there.
And
for sure.
And Fade comes in, you know, when we see him in the Gladiator arena.
Mm.
One
of my favorite parts of the whole
movie. Oh, my God. Like, just, you're talking about the scope and the scale and the monochrome color of, like, white.
So good.
Just, I mean.
The black sun.
Oh, the black sun.
Have you ever seen
never.
A black?
Never.
Never seen it.
Never. I mean, I've seen red sun right. and you know, mm-hmm, Superman mm-hmm. and, you know.
Red sun, blue sun, green sun.
Yeah. Never seen a black sun.
Never seen a black
That's
sun.
That's not an eclipse, right? Like mm-hmm. it's not a shadow of the moon. It's a black
it's
sun.
It's a black sun. Just little details like that mm-hmm. just draw you in. It's like, dude, what is going on? What's going on? And everything made sense. Like the little nuanced things in this movie, it,
yes.
I think, is what gets me.
So let's talk about one of the details. Mm-hmm. When we're learning about the Fremen... did we talk about this now? Or did we talk about... So... When Jessica is learning about what they do with the water of their dead.
Oh, okay. We saw that.
Yeah, I'm saying, I know we talked about it, but was that at work?
Yeah, that was at work.
Okay, so it wasn't here.
No.
Okay, so the detail. So when somebody's dead or whatever, they will drain, they will hydrate their body mm-hmm. and take their moisture, save it, and then put their dead energy mm-hmm. into, like, this pond mm-hmm. in their cavern.
Mm-hmm.
We don't drink it, but, you know, it's there.
Right.
And he's showing, Javier Bardem is showing Jessica this, and she starts to tear up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, don't waste your tears, not even for the dead. And then what does he do?
He takes the tear from her eye. And ingested it. No wasted liquids at all, ever.
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 Now, there's a little bit of comedy with this point.
Uh-huh.
And I forget why this was happening. Was mm-hmm.
it? They went to that sacred place to bury the guy that uh-huh. Paul killed.
No, but mm-hmm. when Jessica has to throw up.
Oh, why does she have to throw up?
That's what I'm trying to remember.
She had to throw up. Why does she have to throw up?
Were they on like a...
Oh, no. They were liquefying. Remember they killed those guys?
Yes.
And they were liquefying like their yeah. bodies and stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like sucking them dry.
And he's like, don't, yeah, don't yeah, let
yeah.
it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't let it out.
She's not like, even the throw up. Not even the throw up. You can't even waste the throw up, man. It was so funny. That was funny.
Yeah.
That was funny. Because he was dead serious. He was right. dead serious. Like, he was giving her like a bona fide order. Do not let that throw up out of your mouth. And she tried, yep. man. She tried. That was hilarious, dude. Oh, that's funny.
Man. Those soldiers, right, when mm-hmm. they come down in the beginning of the film... And their suits,
mm-hmm.
I love. There's on the back of their helmets was mm-hmm. like a little fan, just to cool their body off.
Yeah.
I feel like talking about the details. I just think that was just excellent. And what was really cool, a detail that I thought was cool,
mm-hmm.
was all of those soldiers mm-hmm. were taken out by headshots.
Yeah.
So that when they would drain the body,
mm-hmm.
none of the liquid was gone. Like, they weren't shot in the stomach.
Right.
They weren't shot in the back to where blood would, like, ooze
right,
out of the
right,
body.
Right, right,
it was just a complete headshot.
Nice.
I'm like, that is a detail alone that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. I love just the mood setting. Because, like, when those guys show up, it's like doomsday. You know, it's like, oh boy, there's some serious trouble on the horizon. It's just, dude, this film, man, the director, this guy, these people who have made this film have a very, something very special, man. I'm just gonna have to keep saying that. They have something extremely special. These are some extremely talented people working on this movie.
So some of the people on the film that weren't, I guess I'll kind of transition, kind of piggyback off what you said. Mm. The people who are doing like the sound, just the sound alone. I mean, I don't know if you felt it, but our seats were rumbling.
Yes.
The music, Hans Zimmer, again, that score, the setting, like, I just, you know, John Williams in the 70s and 80s, he did Star Wars, he did Jaws, he did Superman, he did Indiana Jones. He did Harry Potter. This guy is kind of like the soundtrack to a generation. Hans Zimmer is I think, this generation's guy, right? He's done Pirates of the Caribbean. He's done the Dark Knight trilogy. Mm. He's done Dune. He did Man of Steel. He did a ton of other great films. That music, you know. And then there's that cue that you hear that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's just like, when that comes on, it's like, oh, here we go.
Oh, my goodness. Dude, and, good, man.
And the costuming. Like, you know, the Harkonnens, you know, all black, you know, kind of imperialistic. Mm-hmm. You had our Fremen in their still suits, you know, very dark, or, you know, kind of gray, dark, brownish. Then you had Florence Pugh as the princess, and her just
so elegant.
Yes, like the headpieces and her dress, and like, I am. And then when Lady Jessica becomes the Reverend Mother, and how her whole appearance changed and looked elegant, and compared to the peasants that were following her in the south of Arrakis.
True royalty.
I mean, these are the things that, you know, they'll probably get nominated for and probably win an Oscar for.
And they should, man.
The cinematography, I mean, God, it's just freaking brilliant. Like, I'm sad that I won't see this movie in the future on a giant screen.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I would go see it again, but I'm saying when it's out of theaters,
right,
and I only have it at home, or God forbid, on my phone,
right.
I mean, it's just it's gonna be, it'll be missing something.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen this film in theaters, please go see it. It is an experience.
It really is, man. It really is. Like, when you said the cinematography,
yeah,
one of my best, like, one of the best camera angles that I loved in the movie, it like really hit me really hard. After the grand fight at the end, Paul takes the guy down, and then as Paul is like, after victory, he's walking up to the princess and the emperor, and then they have that camera cut. It's like down, and you see the fallen Harkonnen right there.
Yeah.
That was amazing. That was, the music came in, and it was like, look, the prophecy has been fulfilled.
Yes.
That's what I felt like. Yeah. Like, look at it. He's dead. He did it. Like, you know, like, it was just such a powerful thing. And then, but that, it didn't end there. And we'll get to what I mean by that later on. But it just kept on rolling, man. Nonstop. Something I like to switch gears to. Can we talk about Timothy for a second?
Timothy!
I love Timothy, okay? Oh, man. Okay.
I will let you have the floor.
Okay. So this is the brilliance, I feel like, in his performance, okay? The rage, the change in attitude, the change in his approach to the people around him, because all the way to a certain point in the movie, you know, he's a really humble guy. He doesn't like to be called the Messiah. You know, he's yelling at his mom.
The One is so humble, he wouldn't call himself the One.
Right. You know, he's yelling at his mom. His mom is telling him, you know, this is hope. And, you know, he's, you know, screaming back at her, you know, this isn't hope, you know.
Using the voice.
Using the voice and, you know, all that stuff. He's such a humble guy. He doesn't want this. But then he turns. And you see what his mother and his father and Gurney, you see what they, I don't say wanted, but what they kind of saw him being, you know, this is what they believed he would become. This, you know, extremely powerful ruler. He just turned it up, man. He turned it up in a way that not only did I think he wouldn't do it, but I didn't think he could convince me.
Okay.
I didn't think he could convince me.
Is that because maybe you are thinking more of him as Willy Wonka?
That's a part of it, but, you know.
Or he seems so.
He's very docile in his approach. He's very, I don't want to say childlike, but he's very, you know, unassuming is what you get from him, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of like a, you know, he wouldn't hurt anyone, you know, he's, you know, he's not an experienced warrior, he's got, you know, war-torn, you know, scars of battle, you know what I mean? But man, he was able to pull it off. And he did it quite well. Like, okay, so after he drinks the life water, and he goes back, and, you know, they got everybody in the church. You know, you have to you have to be a leader to speak.
Oh, my God.
Okay? Yes. You have to be a leader.
This is my favorite scene in the whole film.
You have to be a leader to speak. And he just turned it up, man. He turned it up. You know, he was out there saying, you know, none of you, no one amongst you can challenge me. Like, what? That might sound little, you know, me saying that. But if you watch the movie, you'll understand why that moment was like, wow, did he really just say that?
In a scene prior to that, he learns that his mother is actually Baron Harkonnen's daughter, which makes him a Harkonnen bloodline. Mm-hmm. And the Harkonnens and the Bene Gesserits are all kind of in league. Mm-hmm. And he says to his mother, so that means that I can't die, or that's why I won't die. So he's going to drink the water of life, knowing that he won't die.
Right.
And so when he does, and he has these visions and, you know, sees visions of a potential water on this planet and him leading these armies and all that, he knows he's untouchable.
Yeah.
And then he goes into that scene that you're describing, and he just, man, I wish I could remember that quote. Mm-hmm. But, like, he was talking about how he just sees everything. He's seen the past.
Yep.
He sees the future. He was seeing that long ago.
He knew people's lives.
Yes. And, like, your 12th, you know, your 12th great-grandmother or whatever died on this planet, you know, back when it was called Dune.
Right.
And I that's not the quote, and I wish I had it all, but, like, when he says that, and then the followers are like, oh!
Right, Messiah, he's
like,
here.
Like, how does anyone know that? Because, you know,
he literally became like God. You know, at that point, you know, as a viewer of the movie, you know, it pulls you in so much, you start to believe, like, whoa, like, okay, maybe he really is something more than he knows. Maybe he really is a god. You know? Yep. It just, man. So well put together. Just cannot stress it enough. It's almost as if, you know, this story doesn't have any loopholes. There's no loose ends. You know, everything is buttoned and knitting up really tight. I loved it, man. I read it.
In that moment with Timothy and kind of the revelation of him being the one, were you on his side as a believer? Mm-hmm. or were you somebody that felt that he is going down a dark path, and he is using the power of faith, mm-hmm. For evil, I guess. Because I will say for me as watching that, I was like, oh man, like he is controlling these people,
yes,
because they want to hear that, uh-huh. And they're not gonna hear anything else. Right.
He came off as extremely dark.
Yes.
He came off as extremely just dark and nasty, and you know, don't mess with me, you know, don't challenge me, you know. He just was done with that, you know. He was done taking no for an answer, you know. It was he what he wanted, you know. You know, there's a new sheriff in town, pretty much. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yep. You know, his coming of age, you know, his you know, his breakout party. And so I would say at that moment, I thought he was going dark.
I was worried.
He was so convincing. The attitude, the mood switch was so severe that I thought he was going dark. I really did. I thought he was going dark. Yeah, I thought he was going dark. I thought he was going dark. I did. And, you know, I still don't know if he isn't going dark. Because I believe there's more to this story. And a small part of me does think that there's a possibility he will go dark. He will be consumed by power, you know. How does that saying go? Absolute power is some power. Corrupts absolute. Yeah, you know what I mean? Absolutely. That whole thing. I thought it was something like that.
Yeah.
I thought it was something like that. You know, he finally obtained this power, this great power. Mm-hmm. You know, he was finally able to see, is what they said. You need to see. He could finally see, you know, his visions weren't all fragmented and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was clear now. He knew things about his mother that his mother didn't even know. His mother didn't even know she was hearkening. Wow. So, you know, it was powerful, man. That's some powerful stuff. Like, you know, the way they incorporated the faith on top of the prophecy, on top of, like, the coincidental, like, happenings in the movie. Like, for instance, when he went down, he drunk the water of life,
yep,
and he goes down. Zendaya shows up. Mm. And at this point, she's in love with Paul, okay?
Hold on.
Okay.
At this point, he asks, Paul wanted a Fremen name.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, well, you're an outsider. You're not a Fremen. You know, you are the Maudib. No, I think he comes up with Maudib at that time.
Yeah, yeah, because that Maudib means like desert mouse or something, yes, like that. The little mouse he loves.
Yes. So she's like, okay, Maudib. And then he asks her, what's your name?
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, I don't really like it. And he's like, well, what is it? And she's like, it's Desert Spring.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh. She goes, he goes, what does that mean? He goes, she's like, I don't know. It's part of some dumb prophecy.
Right.
Dot, dot, dot.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get to your scene.
Okay. Okay, right. So, he goes down, and I mean, like, literally goes down. He's down and out, you know. They think he's dead, you know. Zendaya shows up, his mom shows up, Stilgar shows up, and they're like, you know, his mom's like, it's okay. You know, he's still alive, you know, she's a witch. She can, you know, sense those type of things, still alive. And Stilgar's there, and he's like, you know, Zendaya, it's your time to shine. Zendaya does not approve, okay. She does not want to fulfill this prophecy because she's a non-believer, okay? Dude, I cannot tell you the emotions I felt. It was like a biblical moment when the prophecy was, when Paul drinks the life of water, he will die. And the only way he can be revived is by the tears of the desert spring. Who is the desert spring? Zendaya. Now, she is such a non-believer that she was going to let Paul die. The Jesuit, the new Reverend Mother, his mother Jessica, uses the voice on Zendaya, tells her, do it. She instantly starts crying, you know. She takes some of the tears, wipes it into some of the life water, puts it on his mouth, and he snapped back to life. That was epic, dude. I was like, whoa. That what made me believe. At that point, I'm like, whoa. Like, dude, I feel like I was looking at Jesus Christ, like, yes, come back to life or something. It was, this movie is that, like, you know, it's that type of movie, man. It's that powerful. It was such a powerful moment. It really was. All of the contrasting, like, emotions, mm-hmm, and sides, points of view. You got a devout believer in Stilgar, leader of the Fremen, you know, and he's a believer, firm. You got Zendaya, a non-believer, yet she's one of the most gifted Fremen fighters they have. You got his mother, a new Reverend Mother, something that she was banned from becoming because of her choices to have a baby with Leto. You just had all of that stuff at once coming at you, and then it's like, he rose from the dead. It was crazy, man. It was so good. I cannot stress this enough. This is one of the greatest movies ever.
When the tears hit his, you know, when he resurrects with the tears, all I could think of was Mary's tears on Jesus' feet. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you have any knowledge of Bible stories or whatever, you know, the crucifixion and, you know, Good Friday and all that stuff, I said, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you've got your disciples, you've got your followers, you've got your prophecy, you know, Moses, you know, bringing people out of the chains, and then you have the New Testament where they're just waiting for the Messiah to come. And, oh my gosh. I mean, I was getting a little choked up for you just telling me that. Cause I remember how amazing it was. And what did she do as soon as Paul woke up?
She slapped the hell out of that man. Slapped him, man. Almost took him. He almost went right back down. Yep.
You call her a non-believer. Mm-hmm. I would want to pose a different angle.
Okay.
And say that she was... she started to believe in the prophecy, potentially, of the One. Mm-hmm. And if that's true, and her prophecy is the Desert Spring prophecy, maybe there's part of this other prophecy we don't know, mm-hmm, but if the One comes back to life, mm-hmm, then he will rule. Mm-hmm. Because throughout the movie she talks about, you know, as a I'll use your term, non-believer.
Okay.
As a non-believer, she was saying that, you know, if this guy is the One, he's going to control us. Mm-hmm. And we want free will. We want freedom to think. Because if he is the One, mm-hmm, and everyone who has been living under this prophecy has probably assumed that it's going to be a Bene Gesserit, mm-hmm, person who has mind control, which is what he does with, mm-hmm, the voice. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if she was a non-believer, mm-hmm, but I think she knew that if she did this, mm-hmm, for the people of Arrakis and her freemen, that it would never be the same. Mm. And that's why I think she slaps him.
Okay.
Because she can't undo what she did. And we see what happens after that with him. And it's all because of her. Well, it's partly because of what she did.
Right.
But she, you know, she blames herself.
Right. I mean, without her, the story doesn't continue.
Yes.
You know, without her, the story does not continue.
And I guess, you know, that slap was like, oh my gosh. Like, mm-hmm, like, and I also think, mm-hmm, her use, like, she's no longer useful, right? Mm-hmm. Like, she's just somebody. Mm-hmm. She was somebody who was part of the prophecy. Now that prophecy is used. What does she do?
Right. What does she do now? What does she do? While we on the subject of Zendaya, let's talk about her.
Okay.
Oh, man. Where do we start on our beautiful, beautiful Zendaya? Okay, first we'll start there. She's extremely beautiful. We'll start there.
She is gorgeous.
And you know, side note, I think she's about to take on a bit of a big girl role.
Yes.
Kind of saw a trailer of her in a R-rated movie.
Yep.
Where
you know, she's in one scene potentially having a threesome with two guys.
Yeah. Big girl territory.
Yeah.
So, wow. Right.
And yes, you know, she did do some edgy stuff on Euphoria. Mm. But on a feature film, this could get...
Yeah.
Yeah. Racy.
Right. I was saying, this could be a very R-rated film. So that's that. But now, to her and Dune, what a great performance.
Mm.
What a great performance in there. She was so convincing. So convincing. But this is the part I really want to get to. They made me feel so bad for Zendaya, which in my opinion is so... I am not an emotional movie watcher. I'm just not. I'm not moved often, if ever at all, by anything that happens in a movie. I'm just not that type of... I think it's some sort of like disconnect between I know it's a movie. You know what I mean?
Okay.
But man... The look on her face when Paul says he is going to take the Emperor's daughter hand in marriage was devastating. It was really hard to watch how when everyone bowed and she was the only one left standing.
Incredible.
Paul wouldn't even look back at her because he knew how badly he hurt her. He didn't even look back at her. That was extremely sad. That was a really, really sad part of the movie. Because she's so tough, you know? Up until that point, nothing hurt her. You know what I mean? And man, you just, you know, and it was crazy because, like I said, these are some really brilliant people working on this movie. Because it wasn't like she broke down in a face full of tears or anything like that. You know, she just had that look on her face like, wow, you're gonna do this, huh? You know what I mean? And to see that level of like emotion she had for him, like one of her friends, right? The other, like part of the non-believer group.
Yeah.
You know, she, you know, they were talking and, you know, Paul walks by and she, you know, her look lingered a little bit and she's like, hey, you like got feelings for him now? Because she doesn't do those types of things. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You know, her friend picked up on it instantly, just from a look. You know what I mean? So it was just like, you know, to see how hurt she was. But yet she was still so strong, man. It was just sad. Like, wow, you poor warrior. You know?
She gave everything.
Yeah. She put everything in the paw. He promised her he wouldn't do this. He did the exact thing.
He said, I will always love you as long as I breathe.
He did.
But politically,
he had to do what he had to do.
He's going to be the new emperor, and he's going to take the emperor's daughter. The princess as his bride.
As his bride.
And, you know, keep the blood in the family, you know, if there's going to be any children or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But,
How heartbreaking, man.
Yeah, you know, there's very few actresses that can act with their eyes. Mm. I like to say that sometimes when I'm watching certain people, that they can just break you because you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, man.
That was a beautiful scene, man.
That's kind of, that's, you know, what you're talking about, how you were affected. It's similar to how I was talking about Stilgar, how I just was like, I feel like I'm believing strong enough because he believed.
Uh-huh.
Like, he is getting through to me, like, in my soul.
Right.
Like, I don't want to see him disappointed.
Right.
And you were so connected by Zendaya's performance that she... oh, my God. So, all right. So, if I have one issue with the film, and it's going to be with Zendaya here...
All right.
It's how this movie ends, okay?
Okay.
The movie ends with They're in the pyramid. Paul's gonna take so-and-so's, you know, hand in marriage or whatever. Zendaya leaves. Gurney comes in and says, the houses do not recognize your ascendancy, my lord.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, ready the ships. We are going to paradise.
Right.
Essentially.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, holy shit.
Right.
Here we go.
Yeah.
And the mother says to the daughter, who she can speak in utero,
mm-hmm.
your brother, you know, has begun the holy wars.
Mm-hmm. The baby actually talks that time.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
She asks Jessica, what is my brother doing? Yes. She told him, hey, he's...
Wow. And so, cut, finish, done.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
No. We go to Zendaya on Arrakis watching the jihad and everybody loading up into the ships to go to the houses,
mm-hmm.
or to go somewhere in the world. And she watches this, gets ready to ride the sand dune, and then, you know, we fade to black, end credits,
mm-hmm.
to give us a little possible something more if there's a third film.
Right.
I don't mind that there's a third film. There is a ton of source material that gets us to that third film, but the book ends definitively in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little different because they changed the narrative, which it's fine. This film is much better crafted, so I'm not worried about that. It's just that there was just that little kernel of there's got to be more now.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is not, that's terrible.
Yeah, I have to agree. If there is not more, that would be terrible.
Because if her final scene is her walking out on Paul and the Emperor, the Emperor's rule.
Right.
And she's not a part of this.
Mm-hmm.
And his last scene is leaving the planet to go do whatever he's going to do in the future. Wonderful. But now there's just that little kernel of,
right.
of uh-oh, right. where's she going?
Right. How's that war going to end?
Yeah, where does she,
you know?
So, it's nitpicky,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it doesn't hurt my rating of this movie. It's just one of those things I think that if when I watch this again, I'll just be like, I need something else.
Right.
if this is a trilogy,
mm-hmm.
and we get a third film, great.
Okay.
Wonderful. You know, Back to the Future Part 2, Empire Strikes Back, the second Lord of the Rings. We all knew there was going to be a third film coming.
Mm.
So we knew that we would end on a cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, you know, they haven't announced officially Dune 3.
Right.
But if they are going to do The Messiah, which is the next book in the order of the books, this would be kind of the end of the Paul story. So it would make sense to be a trilogy.
Okay. There had better be more, man. You can't spoil us like this. And then leave us out to dry. I hope this goes on forever.
Yes.
Seriously. Yes. And from what I've heard, it quite possibly could. So, yeah, man. Bring us more. Give us more. What else? Oh, there are a few things that we haven't talked about yet. Like the mixing of the atomic bomb.
Yes.
That was a complete curveball that I had no idea. I was when he said, "Oh, the family's atomic arsenal." I'm like, "What? what did you just say?" And when he said atomic arsenal, I'm thinking like, is he talking about like nukes? And then I'm thinking like, no, he's not talking about nukes. And they show up to this huge cavern, pyramid, whatever, where they got like hundreds and hundreds of nukes lined up, dude, from floor to ceiling. And it's just like, what? Yet another just bomb drop. Just something else that brings you all
and
the way
in. And they fired three atomic warheads at the Harkonnens.
Uh-huh.
And we're like, dude, that was three atomic bombs.
Yes.
Like, we're just like, hold on.
And they were atomic explosions.
You know, and you know, this book was written after... Hiroshima and that kind of stuff. So that definitely had an influence in the writing. And it just, again, adding to the layers of like, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, you know, there's so much they're saying in these books.
Mm-hmm. And just another, you know, adding, you know, adding more to the scope. Three nukes all at once. All on screen, guys. Three nukes went off at once, all on screen. Oh, yep. Just an incredibly grand film. So big. It might be the biggest scope of a film I've ever seen. It is encompassing entire worlds, literally. And it was beautiful, man. If you know what? If I had to sum this up with one word, it would be beautiful. Nice. This was a beautiful movie. Beautiful. It really was.
So, there are some people that claim this is the greatest science fiction movie of all time.
Here we go.
How do you feel? Now, I know people can quantify this in different ways, and, you know, maybe we can discuss that, but, well, okay. Mm. Prior to this movie, if you had to say the greatest science fiction movie of all time, what would it have been?
I'm hands down on The Matrix.
Okay. Is this movie better than The Matrix?
Yikes. Yikes, man. I wish I was prepared for that question. Because. I wish I was prepared because. I have such a
long. 4 minutes.
Okay. I have such a long running connection with The Matrix. It's been around 4 years. My entire life.
Yep.
31 years old. It'll be 32 this year. Yeah, it's been around. It's
been. Pretty much.
You know, for my entire
life. Since you were awake.
And it was epic when it first came out. Right. Slow motion. You know, freezing bullet. Right, bullet time. Just the whole bit. Matrix was awesome, man. And so my heart wants to say, you can't do that. You can't do that. But my mind, man, what I saw on that screen, man. Oh, man. My mind wants to say Dune is far and away the best sci-fi film ever created. And I'm talking about, you can, however you quantify it, if you just want to say sci-fi because there's some sort of monster, so you talk about Godzilla, you want to talk about alien species, whatever you want to say. This is made up of greatness.
Mm.
It really is.
Prior to this movie, the greatest science fiction movie of all time to me was Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a lot of Star Wars vibes watching this movie.
Okay.
But this is way better. Okay. I am moved. I am, you know.
Before you continue, I got a question for
you. Okay.
Are you cursed with Star Wars lore? I find that you find a bit of Star Wars in almost everything. Have you been cursed by the Star Wars lore?
I'm going to answer that right after the break.
Okay.
And we're back.
Mm-hmm. Should I pose the question again?
Yes.
Okay. The question is, are you cursed with Star Wars lore?
I am definitely not prepared with that question. Because I have to, like, am I that nerd? Am I? well, you know. In the blame. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm kind of processing my answer, but what have we discussed? What have I discussed with you that makes you say that?
Well, okay. You said something very interesting at work the other day. You said that Paul is Darth Vader.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, wow, how did he get that? You know, I was just really, I was shocked by that. I said, wow, how did he come up with that? So explain, sir.
All right. So that's great, right? Mm. So, yeah. I think, you know, Paul Maldi Uso Atreides is the basis and the template for The character Anakin Skywalker, who was a normal, you know, boy with exceptional abilities, who was trained to be a Jedi, to be the hero of all heroes. And then, through a series of events, loses his way, falls to the dark side, and is consumed by power and darkness and being in control of everything, that he eventually becomes Darth Vader. So, watching this film and watching him sort of succumb to the power and the darkness and the abilities and to be the man, to be the emperor. I mean, literally in Star Wars, the emperor makes Anakin Darth Vader. Okay. Right? Like, we're talking like same terminology.
Right.
Are you speaking about the prophecy of the one who will bring balance to the Force? Anakin Skywalker is viewed by some as the prophecy of the one who's going to bring balance to the Force. I mean, we're talking... I mean, we could really side-by-side, you know, chart Star Wars and Dune. It's crazy because... I mean, we're talking even visuals, you know, the black and the white of the bad guys of the Empire. Luke, born on a desert planet. You know, Anakin from a desert planet, the same desert planet. There are princesses. you know, Gurney could be kind of the Han Solo character. I want to get back to the question. So that's why I thought, Paul is, you know, it's almost blasphemy to say, oh, Paul is Darth Vader. It's like Darth Vader is Paul. Holy mackerel. So am I cursed to have so much Star Wars lore? I've been watching Star Wars and reading Star Wars since the early 80s. So we're talking, let's see, since 83, which was when I was about 5 or 6, I saw Return of the Jedi. We're now in 2024. It's almost 40 years later. I've had 40 years of Star Wars books and video games and movies and just, you know.
Right.
Nerd talk. I haven't gotten into the Dune universe. Okay. And I want to. I'm so excited to read more and learn more.
Okay.
So I am cursed. it's unfortunate because I see a lot of Star Wars and everything. When we watch Rebel Moon, that's why I gave that movie a low score. Because I just sat there going, I think Star Wars did it better. Okay. Oh, Star Wars did that better. Oh, that's trying to be like Star Wars. And it just, it does hurt my view, my movie watching. So, yeah, it sucks.
Oh, my goodness.
So, for me, Star Wars was the number one science fiction movie of all time. It was inspiring. It was exciting. It was adventurous. Effects, costume, music, story. Dune Part 2. I think because how much it affects me, they do all of those things that I like in Star Wars better, and they also have that like biblical faith layer to the storyline that really, hold on.
Bless you, sir.
Thank you. I'm so sorry to your ears. That layer of storytelling puts this movie, I believe, above Star Wars. Wow. And I mean, I have, you know, I've got Star Wars, I got characters tattooed on my arm. Mm-hmm. Like, it's in my blood.
Yes, sir.
And, it's literally just...
We've got a wall painted with Star Wars photos, right, and autographs.
Yes. So, but as a film, like, yes, 40 years later, filmmakers should be able to do better and present better than what they did in 1977. And we're talking 30, you know, 20 some years, 25 some years removed from The Matrix.
Right.
So, you know, maybe in 20 years, there's going to be another film that blows this one away.
Right.
But right now, I mean, like, there's not many movies that can move you emotionally. Mm-hmm. There's not many movies that can just leave us breathless. And it's, this one is an absolute best science fiction picture of all time. It's better than Star Wars. Mm-hmm. It's better than, you know, Alien. It's better than Terminator 2. It's better than The Matrix. It's better than anything we've ever seen.
Right. Even the most recent Godzillas, which are cool. Yeah. Man.
Those look amazing. Yep. But I'm sorry, they're kind of forgettable.
Yes, sir.
This one, I mean, this one shakes my soul.
I swear. I probably will. Some of the lines, some of the scenes in these movies, I'll never forget.
No.
Just like The Matrix. Like, you'll, you know, you'll never forget when you saw Neo do the bend backwards, you know, over the bullets. You never forget that. Never, ever, ever. You'll never forget Mr. Smith, the crazy agent with the glasses. You'll never forget. I used to have nightmares of like thousands and thousands of Mr. Smith, you know, coming to get me. This is that type of movie. There are things in this movie happening that you will never forget. I truly believe that. Which leads me to my next question.
Okay.
What does this movie, this series, mean for movies of this genre, this caliber, moving forward? Does this set a new bar?
Yes.
Okay.
100%.
Okay.
We just said it.
Yeah.
If the bar was 1999's The Matrix, or 77's Star Wars, or 91's Terminator 2, or Alien.
Terminator,
You know? If those were the bars, this is a
Predator.
Bar. Predator. Mm. And we're talking about movies that were essential to the advancement of technology and filmmaking.
100%.
Terminator 2, I mean, the first time you see the liquid metal guy, come on.
You'll never forget
it. Never forget it.
You'll never forget it.
I mean, you see Star Wars, like, you know, prior to that, you had like Star Trek and some really janky science fiction stuff. And, you know, even a couple years after Star Wars, the first Superman movie comes out, you know, and the tagline is, you will believe a man can fly. Like, when you see that film. Nobody was doing that.
Right.
The Matrix, I mean, absolutely. Talk about a perfect time in filmmaking. When the world was changing, technology was changing, plugging into the Matrix. I mean, people just say that on the regular now. Like, it must be the we're in the Matrix today. Like,
it's a part of the culture.
It's part of the culture. Star Wars, part of the culture. Terminator, part of the culture. I'll be back.
You know? Yes, sir.
Come with me if you want to live. You know, have you seen this boy?
Right.
I mean, people, you know.
Get to the chopper.
Get to the chopper. Predator. Predator, I ain't got time to bleed.
Right. Oh, man.
And now this one. I mean, we'll just walk around at work and just be like, long live the fighters.
Dude, I swear. I am so tempted to go back to that kid and ask him what he told
us. Maybe the next movie we see, if he's there taking tickets.
I'm hunting you down, kid. I'm hunting you down. It's going to be weird, man, but I hope you comply.
He's ready for it. He's like somebody like me.
Right.
So, yes, as far as the science fiction genre, this movie this is the bar.
This is the new bar.
When the Harkonnen army is coming in and invading an Arrakis, and their gunships are like shooting down at the citizens. It's like I had seen, you know, I'd seen science fiction movies and I'd seen war movies, but I'd never seen an invasion shot and done like that. It just beautiful. It was like I had never seen a movie before. What Everything was amazing. Just,
just chaos was beautiful. Oh, just man. What beautiful scenes, man. What beautiful scenes. I don't know how you even, you know, reach this bar. If this is the new bar, which I also believe this should be the new bar, I don't know how you reach this bar. I don't know how they did this.
Right.
This might be, you know, we might not see anything this good for a very long time. I don't know. How do you get this? How do you do this? How do you do this? I don't know. I can't even, like, even imagine, you know, a storytelling. Yeah, you know, I just can't. I don't see it. I don't see it, man. I really don't. And, you know, that's why, you know, that's why The Matrix is so good, you know. Yep. The story, you know, that was powerful, man.
Red pill,
you
know? Blue pill.
Right. Yep.
What if you took the other one?
Right. Yes, sir. I don't know how you top this. I don't know. I really don't. This, my personal opinion, this film will last the test of time. It will stand the test of time for sure. I think the longer it's out there, the more people are going to watch it and catch on to it. And eventually, man, it's going to be just as big as anything else we mentioned.
100%.
You know? I mean, just as iconic. Timothy, you will live forever. Man. Congratulations, sir. Well done. Zendaya, well done.
Everybody.
Well done.
Austin Butler, amazing. Mm-hmm. Yep. Josh Brolin, amazing. Javier Bardem.
Can we mention how Josh Brolin like had us like on the edge of our seats? Like, what? He's so alive. Oh my gosh.
He comes back. His appearance.
What is he did? Right? He's alive.
I was like, oh my gosh.
So good.
And look, when he was in this movie and he's got Paul's ear, I was like, I don't trust him.
Right?
Uh-huh. I was kind of with Zendaya. I kind of had that side eye, like, is he gonna try to like take him away from the Freeman?
Has he been turned?
Is he in the Harkonnen's, you know, plans?
Because it was like, where have you been?
Right.
Where have you been?
And he's like, oh well, I'm alive and I'm just kind of smuggling spice.
Right. Like what? When you're this guy you've been sworn to is out here like. At war? Like, what, dude? Where have you been? So good, man. So good. How, like, I just can't.
And even in the temple scene, when he pulls Zendaya down to sit by him, like, just, like, shut up. Like, just let him, like, don't ruin this or whatever. I'm thinking to myself, because we knew that his mother kind of had machinations behind the scene. And I was like, are they in league? Are they using him for some other nefarious purpose? And maybe that's still true.
Right.
But I just don't trust him.
Okay. You know who I feel like that about? His mom. Oof. Doesn't sit well with me.
No.
She seems dark, man.
No. As soon as she drank the water and became the Reverend Mother.
She has something planned, man.
She says to his sister, the only way we can protect your brother is if the followers believe in him.
Yes.
And then, so it's like, and then when...
she said, we'll take the weak first.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. And then when he has the emperor kiss the ring and he takes over the emperorship, there's a quick shot of her. I mean, just in her eyes, just like... You know, looking like this is exactly what we wanted.
So mischievous. You know what I mean? It's like, what is her end goal? Oh, man. What is it?
You know? Being a Jesuit, what does she see? What does she know?
Right.
Is the daughter going to be a bigger part of the story?
Right.
Or has she always known all along? Like, yeah. He was born to be a king, born to be a ruler of Caladan and House Atreides. But now he's going to be the ruler of the entire galaxy. And she's the Reverend Mother. She's kind of the right-hand person. Is she just wanting power?
Right.
I don't know.
I mean, she is a Reverend Mother. And the other Reverend Mothers, they're very, like, mischievous and, like, you know, they've got, like, their own agendas and, you know, they're double-crossing the Emperor and the Harkonnen. Yes. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, like, is she full-on Reverend Mother to where she's, like, she's got her own agenda and, you know, she's gonna double-cross, you know, everybody, the Empire, her son, the Reverend Mothers, the Freeman. You know, she might end up being the last woman standing, you know what I mean?
I thought we need a third movie.
Yes. So good, man. Some other stuff I wanted to mention, like more of the little details, like the food they were eating. It had spice in it, so when Paul ate it, he got like a little loopy. He had like a vision, and he was like, "There's spice in the food." It's just like, wow. Like, dude, it was a nonstop just showcase of storytelling, and you know. Just constant, just greatness. It really was. It was just great. Great.
Any other details that kind of stand out?
Any other details?
Man. I'll tell you one thing.
Okay.
You noticed.
Okay.
In one of his visions of the knife.
Oh, yes. The vision of the knife, you know, when he was talking to his mom. After he drunk the life water, and you know, his mom can also see. So she doesn't see a way out of this, you know. But Paul is more powerful. So when he drinks the life water, you know, he can see a way out of this. You know, he said he saw, you know, many futures or higher, whatever he said, none of them really lead to anything good except for one future. And then it's like the small, like, you know, second cut of a knife stabbed into someone. I thought it was Paul. I thought Paul would sacrifice himself or something like that. But no, once again, it was him delivering that blade into someone else. If you remember, in part one, he kind of had a vision of him killing someone, which he did. So, you know, that was really cool how, you know, at the end, and you know, you got multiple things intertwined in that, you know, like when Gurney first shows up, you know, Paul pops up out of the ground and takes him down. And he's like, "I heard your footsteps, old man." Like, that was something he told him in the first movie when Gurney was training him. And he said, "Hey, man, like, why ain't you looking behind your back?" And, you know, Paul told him, like, "I can hear your steps. You know, I know your steps. I know you." That's exactly what he told him when he, you know, saw him on the desert. Didn't even see him, but he knew it was him just from the steps. Incredible. So Paul's highly trained. Yes. You know, I don't, you know, that's something that I feel like they're seeding into the movie, that he is far, far, far more capable than they have showed us so far. He's really, really capable. Really capable. Extremely capable. You know, just little details like that. When what's that guy's name? The psychopath? Feud?
Fade.
Fade. So when he's battling Fade, they both take out a knife.
Mm-hmm.
It's a one blade fight. That's how they do these things. And they're fighting. You know, Paul ends up losing his blade. And out of nowhere, there's another blade that he stabs into Fall, you know, kills him. But that scene also, you go back to the first movie when him and Gurney were duking it out and Paul had him. But, you know, Gurney told him, like, you know, "Look below, my lord. You would join me in death." That played out in real life. More training, you know, coming to the forefront for Paul. Just little stuff like that, man. It drew me in, man. It really, really did. So good. So good. Yes. Because Paul had been had. He had been stabbed several times. Yes. And, you know what I mean? It looked like he was going to lose that fight. But that guy was going to join him in death.
What about the sandworms, man?
What powerful creatures. The raw power, like the you could just feel the power in those things, man. When they were like on top of them and riding them, and you got a freaking mini army. You got like seven of these gigantic continent size worms, you know, coasting through, you know what I mean? The entire freaking Fremen society are on the backs of these things.
With their flags.
With their flags, just completely represented. Dude, man. They still haven't showed us how you get the tooth of one of those right. things.
Maybe
you
know? It's from the baby one.
Oh, maybe it's from the baby. The baby earthworm. Maybe. Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. I forgot about that. Right. Which is crazy. I couldn't believe they, you know what I mean? Had the baby worm or whatever. That was crazy. But it's great on yes. so many, many yes. levels. Well, so many levels.
I'm sure I already know your answer, but how would you rate this film?
Man, is it possible to score higher than a 10?
I would.
Okay. this is a 10 out of 10 bona fide smash hit. This is a 10, man.
Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. I will echo that. I mean, I've been telling people it's a 20 out of 10.
Yeah.
You know, the first movie is excellent. It's a 10. This, you know, doubles it mm-hmm. straight away. But yeah, 10 out of 10 officially, but it is deservingly should be nominated next year for an Oscar for Best Picture, Best Director, Effects, all that kind of stuff. I think Austin Butler should be nominated for Supporting Actor. Mm. I think Timothée and Zendaya should be up for Best Leads. Mm-hmm. I mean, if, you know, even Javier Bardem, I mean, I could see him probably getting the Supporting Actor nomination.
Okay.
But it's perfect. It's a masterpiece. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's everything. It's everything a film should be.
Yeah.
It's absolutely. Inspiring. It's fantastic. It's thought-provoking. So many things.
Mm-hmm. Yep. A gem. Masterpiece, as you said.
It was beautiful chaos. Yes. I love it.
It's just absolute masterpiece. Well, and what a way to start the year, man.
Woo!
You know? What a way to start the year.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. This could be the best picture of the year. It should be. I don't know what's going to top it. Mm-hmm. And again, this might be in a class of its own.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to think of what's coming out. You know, we got an Alien movie coming out later this year. That might be really cool. Mm-hmm. There's a new Lord of the Rings movie coming out. There's a new Planet of the Apes coming out.
Mm-hmm.
But this is something special.
Yes.
And I want to say I think I enjoyed it way more than most of these other films. Because I had no knowledge.
Mm.
I didn't read ahead in the book. I came home and I read some stuff. Thankfully, I would have been spoiled.
Right.
So I was just so engulfed in it.
So engulfed, man. I agree with you. Yep. This is... please go out and see this movie, guys. Yes. please go out and see this movie. It's going to be a beautiful... 2.5 hours.
Yes.
You will not regret spending.
At all. Well, if you haven't already, please like or comment. Leave a review on whatever platform you're listening to. We are available on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, YouTube Music, Google Podcasts. We also have a Twitter page or X at Destruction Pod. We are on Facebook. There's a fan group page. And I don't know, leave us a review, let us know what you think, and I'll let Jeremiah send us out.
All right, everybody, another one down. We are signing off. For Jason, I am Jeremiah. We are Destruction Reviews Podcast. Ask your parents before subscribing.